This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hey, all cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's good to be back. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling relaxed over the international break here, Josh. You put out the question to our listeners, what is everyone doing over the course of this international break without FPL to keep us occupied? We got a few interesting responses.
Yeah, Jim Payne went on a long weekend to Chattanooga. Josh Willett installed a doggy door that had been needing going for weeks. Jeremiah Johnson did dishes, laundry, folded clothes, dropped off, and picked up kids.
That's, Jeremiah, living the dream.
That's what we all want to be doing on our Saturday. This is why we got into the Premier League, right? It was to avoid having to do stuff like this on a Saturday.
Have you ever given any thought to installing a doggy door? I think about this occasionally. The intense pressure of actually cutting a hole in a door,
yeah,
which sort of negates the purpose of a door, right?
Like, yeah, and people,
so you got to do it right.
You
measure
do it
twice, cut once.
And burglars could burgle your home now, you know. And I saw Home Alone. I mean, you know, they climbed right through that thing. So
yeah, if Josh Willett, if you live in a town, a hamlet, a village of some kind that is known for having very small cat burglars, beware. Check that doggy door.
Be very careful. I guess we made the most of it because we went and watched our alma mater win a big game last night.
Yeah, we watched American football.
We did. We watched American football. Got a little grief on Twitter for some people. I think Richie on Twitter was like, I can't believe you guys can watch that stuff. But, you know, I don't really like it as much as I used to, but I still enjoy my uni playing football in the evenings. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, gridiron definitely has its pitfalls, but all sports have their ups and downs, the things that they contribute and also take away from society.
Right. I mean, football does, like, take more away because, you know,
get
it does
brain damage.
You get brain damage. Yeah, the games take 5 hours. It's, like, the most corporate sport in the world. But, you know, that said, we had fun.
Well, this is an interesting question. Then, let's get on to FPL-related stuff. But speaking of, like, it's our alma mater, where we went to college/university. It's my understanding that this sort of camaraderie, this culture around your school, sports teams, doesn't really exist as it does in the United States, elsewhere around the world.
Right.
Like, if you went to Leeds University, you're not like tracking how the Leeds lacrosse team is, or the Leeds cricket team is doing week to week.
Right. But looked at the other way, you know, if you went to a college that has a, you know, really big football team or a basketball team here in the States, it's actually more similar to the Premier League fan experience, I think, because
club culture is very similar to college sports here in the States. It's true.
Exactly. We were singing the fight song last night and, as many words, we have like an unusually long fight song. So I always forget like a whole verse.
Yeah. All right. What are we going to talk about today on the Always Cheating Pod, Josh?
All right, Brandon. We're taking a lot of questions. We're going to do this a little differently than usual. We're not going to recap Game Week 7. That's in the books. I think that everyone's had enough time to digest it. We're going to talk about key questions going into Game Week 8. We're going to talk about forwards, midfielders, and defenders. After that, which we have a lot of questions from listeners, and a lot particularly about the sort of Manfield City, the Man City midfield situation. And after that, what we're going to do is a team by team look at just where every team in the Premier League is through 7 weeks of the season. And this is like a quick, like 1 minute per team, just like one thing we know, one thing we don't know. So we'll be going through all the teams. We're actually going to start at the bottom of the table and work our way up. I'm looking forward to that, Brent. I think that's going to be a lot.
We're going to go through known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns.
That's right.
For each team.
It's a Donald Rumsfeld reference there for anybody who
absolutely
didn't get that. So part one, let's get right into it. No dilly-dallying this time, Brandon, except for that whole thing about you know, our alma mater.
And doggy doors.
Doggy doors. Key questions going into Game Week 8. I've broken this up into three categories: forwards, midfielders, and defenders. Let's start with forwards. Leo Howell says, with forwards all over the place, is it time to consider Firmino, Vardy, other, rather than the big three approach?
So it's funny that I guess it's not funny in light of the last few weeks, the discussion of the big three.
I don't see anybody laughing here, Brandon.
Right, but Firmino and Vardy are on the outside looking in on the big three. This is their opportunity to become part of the big three, right? I mean, even though they don't have that big price tag, 10 plus, now that Morata has dropped out of the picture,
and Aguero,
exactly, with the rib injury.
Right.
I just don't think anyone is yet to be sold on Lacazette as an FPL player. I mean, I think a lot of us agree that Lacazette looks pretty good for Arsenal. He's a pretty classic striker.
Yeah, he has to score on the road. He needs a road goal.
Yeah, right. And I think I have more faith in Firmino or Vardy. I mean, given the fact that Firmino is kind of in a drought right now, I still think I'd choose Firmino over Lacazette at the moment. If you look at Liverpool's fixtures coming up, it's Man United, then Spurs, but then it looks really good: Huddersfield, West Ham, Southampton, and so on, where you would definitely assume Liverpool goals are coming. I mean, we can come back to Liverpool discussing midfield, but Firmino is not going to not score another goal this season, and I can imagine you have other things to repair in your team than Firmino if you still have him.
Right. So
how are you?
Yeah.
So you dropped Morata over this break because his value is going down. So you've been having to address this question head on with your team, Josh.
Right. I have a pretty top heavy lineup right now. I have Kane. I actually do have Lacazette right now. I brought him in for the Brighton fixture, and now I'm kind of, you know, it's the classic, the 1 week transfer never works, right? The plan was to bring him in, and then I was going to move him to Jesus, of course Morata gets injured, and I have to, you know, make some changes. And Kane scores two goals and really looks essential in this, you know, with this home match at Burnley coming up. So I just burned four. I burned four at the beginning of the week. I didn't want to take a bunch of what could be like a 0.4 million price drop, because it just hurt me so much last year, you know, not doing these price drops. And also, I felt really hurt last year, and this is not really answering Leo's question, but I felt really hurt last year by not by being a little too stubborn. You know, like someone like Kane just, you know, really hits peak form. He'd scored two more goals in the international break. And then this feeling of like, well, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to jump on the bandwagon's too full. I'm going to zig when everyone else is zagging, you know? Yeah, and I just thought, I'm just going to bring him in and burn four and just not even like deal with the pressure of it. Right. So I brought in Sterling and Kane for Morata and Ali. And, I thought about Jesus, but, you know, he's in Brazil, played the full 90 in their first qualifier. They play their next one tomorrow. Or maybe it's tonight. I can't remember.
They play on Tuesday, actually, against Chile.
Yeah. And so it's possible he doesn't play, but I think he probably will play, given how much, you know, I don't actually, I mean, Chile, are they already, they might have actually already qualified.
I mean, Brazil is in. So
right.
My question about that is, much was being made. There are lots of headlines about Neymar complaining about the ridiculous altitude in Bolivia, and which Bolivia uses to its home field advantage. But if you've got Jesus playing the full 90,
even if he just plays 30, right? I mean, even if it's just I don't think he's not going to make the 18, right? So, you know, full 90 and then 30 again on a Tuesday. He's got to fly all the way back. I think there's a chance that he actually comes off the bench, you know, for this Stoke game. I mean, he might play. I mean, you know, he might play and he might score 3 goals. But I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to go with Kane, who's like the sure thing. They, you know, they had 2 like relatively easy international fixtures. So, I mean, I guess, you know, for me, I'm going heavy hitter for now. And, you know, it looks like Morata might be back fairly quickly. It actually looks like Aguero might be back kind of early now, too. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the bigger issue actually is what you're doing, because you have this this situation that can't go on any longer, right? I mean,
The Calvert-Lewin problem.
Yeah. I mean, how much longer can you persist with this experiment? This art installation you've got going on in your
third record. Go back into the archives of Always Cheating, our preseason coverage where we have 10 rules for FPL success, and we do warn against this very thing of beware the cheap starting striker.
Right.
Calvert-Lewin comes in at 5 million, and I bring him in, and then I basically build a whole team around, I don't build it around Calvert-Lewin, but he's sort of baked into it now. Having a 5 million slot in my front line is baked in, and I can't get him out because now I also have a bunch of 5+ million midfielders like Gross and Moy. Right. So to get Calvert-Lewin out, it's almost like wild card level territory. So
but he has to go at some point, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe not. I mean, what about even like him to Abraham or something like that?
Well, I mean, is what kind of upgrade is that? Calvert-Lewin to Tammy Abraham?
I see that as an upgrade, personally.
I mean, I would rather get Boney in for Calvert-Lewin than Tammy Abraham. I mean, I have 1.5 million in the bank, so I could go up to 6.5, which actually does leave me enough in there to get Boney.
All right, right? So let's, I mean, because this is actually getting us back to answering Leo's question, right? Because I think that one answer here is actually that you don't need to go with the three heavy hitters up front, that you can go with a cheap, a cheapish, let's say 7 million or cheaper third striker. And then what you do is you actually have 2 Man City midfielders, right? Like maybe you have a Mo Salah or Christian Eriksen, and then you can actually have 2 Man City midfielders, which is really hard to do if you have 3 expensive players up front. So I think that if you did that, then what's nice about that too is like, yeah, it already becomes like sort of a cliche, the like Pep rotation, like beware of it. But it's the reality. But if they're scoring 4 or 5 goals a game and players score when they come off the bench, you just need to have some players from that yeah. team in your midfield or forward line or something, you know?
Right, totally.
You're just going to have to deal with the occasional fixture where they don't play, you know, or they only play 30 minutes or whatever. And that can't be enough to dissuade you because they're scoring so many goals right now. Yeah. And their fixtures are really good coming up. So I think, yeah, you could do those 2. You know, let's say it was Sterling and Sané. And then you have maybe someone like Chicharito, right? I mean, who's like 7 million. I think I would rather go cheaper. Like, I wouldn't look at Firmino or Vardy. I would go even cheaper, and I would try to find like a 7 million or cheaper option.
Yeah. Calvert-Lewin or somebody of that ilk, if you're in that spot like I am, I mean, I've been playing 4-4-2 the last couple of weeks. And that's fine. That's something you can get away with. I'm coming back to this Jesus question of the international break. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this is a problem that anyone needs to solve going into game week 8 just because of that Jesus issue. You have guys like Jesus who are great long-term solutions to your front 3 that may not factor into game week 8. So do you want to spend a lot of time and energy thinking about what transfer you're going to make in your front 3 only to kind of blow it for game week 8? Maybe you sit on a guy like Firmino if you still have him. Maybe you sit on Tammy Abraham for another week and wait until game week 9 when things are settled from the break to go in for a guy like Jesus.
Brandon, how much money do you have in your bank right now?
I have 1.5 in the bank. So if you take Calvert-Lewin out, I'm looking at a 6.5.
You know that you're 0.1 short of Chris Wood, who I think is a really good option there. He's 6.6 million, and he has West Ham, Newcastle, and Swansea at home in three of the next five. I think he's a really interesting third option there.
I think it's kind of nuts that a guy like Chris Wood is that expensive, 6.6.
It is a lot. I mean, he's, you know, only two goals in the season, but he's looked dangerous. I mean, I actually think he's played well. He actually could have scored in the Everton match.
He functions so perfectly in that Sean Dyche system where he is able to hold up that ball. He's able to menace the back line. He's just like perfect for that. He's been a great player for them. Kind of worth 6.6 in FPL. I can't believe he is.
Yeah, I know. It seems too high by about half a million.
But it is so scattershot, the pricing on the strikers this season, going anywhere from 12.5 for Kane. He started at 12.5, right? Yeah, 12.5 for Kane, all the way down to, you've got starters now like Calvert-Lewin at 5.0 or Tammy Abraham. And then everyone in between, it's just like there's almost no rhyme or reason between Chicharito and Wilfred Bony, who probably both have the same scoring potential long term. I know we could argue about that, you and me. You're a Bony hater.
I am a Bony hater. I have, speaking of Lew Hallah, but I have a bet that he's going to score less than five goals in the season, and he's still at a big fat zero through through 7 weeks. I know he didn't join the squad until week three or four. Jerry Gonzalez says, my international break dilemma: Lukaku for Jesus or Mickey for that's Mkhitaryan for Sané, Sterling. Brandon, I'll take the second, the first part of this.
Okay,
and. You know, just, you don't actually have to ask us if you should get rid of Lukaku, because I am always going to say no, that you should not get rid of Lukaku. Yeah. Now, it sounds like Ibra is like coming back to training. Okay, fine. Like maybe by the time the international or by the time the December holiday fixtures roll around, maybe then we have to think about getting rid of him. But through then, I'm going through all the difficult fixtures. I'm playing it out. I'm riding it.
Well, I mean, subsequent to that, we had a question from Mark saying, is getting rid of a 60% owned player ever a good idea? He's got to be referring to Lukaku here. And right. I mean, scientifically, no, it's a terrible idea. And if we're talking about guys like Aguero and Morata, who are out for, multiple game weeks, you've got to hold Lukaku. And there's no reason to get rid.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we talked about on the, we talked about this on the podcast with Peter Blake, the Patreon podcast. You know, it's just, he's 60% owned for a reason. You know, I mean, it's like people get very caught up in the ownership and they feel sort of locked into him because his ownership is so high. It's like you can't get away. But, I mean, he's owned that way. It's not just because there are a lot of Man United fans out there. I mean, you know, he's that expensive because he scored, he scored seven goals in the first seven games. He's got only one assist, actually. I'm surprised he doesn't have more than that. You know, he's on eight bonus points, second overall, point leader right now for forwards. So
he should have more assists, right? Because he's basically assisted himself on half of those goals because he's not able to put the first attempt away, and it just comes right back into his head.
His credit, he doesn't give up.
Well, another thing we talked about with Peter, too, is Lukaku. It's hard for Lukaku to pass the eye test because he's not looked all that flashy, but what he is doing for this Man United squad is consistently getting into great scoring positions.
Yeah.
And you really can't overlook that. And that is why he's scoring all these goals. He'll continue to do that. So let's just move on from
that. And I don't worry about this little injury thing that they're talking about. I have no concern about that. Maybe Friday morning Mourinho comes out at a press conference, but barring that, I think it's a certainty that he plays away to Liverpool. It's too big of a game.
Yeah, doubtless. Okay, so we're getting on to Jerry's question though about Mkhitaryan for Sané or Sterling. So Mkhitaryan, he scored for his country over the international break. He's no slouch, but his stats and his level of performance for Manchester United has kind of dwindled over the last few game weeks.
Yeah, I would move Mkhitaryan for Sterling. And that actually leads us right into kind of part one, section B. It's like a legal contract. Midfielders, we're going to talk about Well, we're going to talk about a lot of mids, Brandon. But first, to kind of set the table here a little bit, Nick Edge says, how long until a premium mid starts to perform? How long can I survive with 4-3-3 and 3-4.5 midfielders?
I'd say for a while longer. If you're talking about guys like Hazard or Alexis Sanchez,
3-4.5 midfielders is a lot, though. No one's scoring in that 4.5 million range.
That's the system one plays, though, to go really big both at the front and in your defense. So I can't balk at that, not knowing what Nick's entire starting 11 looks like.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of managers out there are running with 3-4.5 mids on a rotation so they can go as big as they want in their defense and their strike force. And yeah. I think there are a lot of valid rotation. I mean, okay, there are valid rotations for 3-4.5 mids if you're just trying to rotate the best opportunity to score 3 points into your midfield.
Yeah, I do think you need to go a little higher. I mean, because I have 2 4.5 mids, and you know, I'm getting absolutely nothing from them. I mean, they're actually both
red flags.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah. Loftus Cheek can't play in that Chelsea match, Chalaba.
Yeah, Chalaba.
Yeah, he's out for the probably the season. So
which is a shame.
It is a shame. But even those guys weren't going to be getting me. I mean, certainly none of them were. I don't think either of them even had an assist so far in the season. Chalaba looked dangerous, and I mean, Loftus-Cheek has looked very dangerous at times. And you know, I think he will look a little better when the fixtures get better for Crystal Palace. But I think you need a third mid that at least has some threat. I mean, I have Choupo-Moting. That was just a stats-based pick. That was something that a lot of our friends on the internet, you know, who love to put together these algorithms looking 5-10 weeks ahead, he was popping up at the top of those lists. I got an assist last week. They have a tricky fixture, you know, way to City, but then the fixtures look really, really good from game week 9 on. And, you know, he's 5.6 million, very affordable. He's, you know, basically playing as an out of position forward. I mean, they have a Juve as a wing back right now.
No, which is so random.
It's crazy. Yeah. But he looks really dangerous. You know, he's very tall. I don't know if you've seen any, you've seen him play at all really, but
he cuts a striking figure.
He does. Yeah. And, almost actually had a goal. The assist could have been a goal if he hit it a little bit harder. It was kind of a cool, like, second effort. He sort of hit it, and it came back to him, and he knocked it over, and then Crouch scored the goal. So, yeah, I do think you need to at least one. Like, and I think Pascal Gross is another perfectly valid option, right? He's 5'6" or 5'7".
5'7", dog. I'm picking up value on Pascal.
Yeah, even, you know, who's the Newcastle? Matt Ritchie?
Yeah.
Or even Christian Atsu, right, at 5 million is another option.
Well, let me put it this way. There are really only two must-have, or you could argue three must-have midfielders right now at any price value, and that's Eriksen, Salah, and David Silva. Those are the three that you could just slot in, and that's great. And those are the best of the higher-priced mids. We're not even considering Hazard or Alexis Sanchez at this point yet. Beyond that, I think you're exactly right, Josh. Like, you need to find somewhere to invest in what is going to be definitely attacking points potential. But it is a slot machine still at this point.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees here. I don't know that we can tell you which third midfielder, which fourth midfielder to bring in right now. It's kind of just to go with your gut. Look as much as you can, compare the stats. But there's no one to, like, wholeheartedly recommend.
Yeah, no, I agree. Even Choupo-Moting, who I'm happy to have because I feel like he's good value. It's not like I feel like I'm getting a goal or an assist every game week or even every other game week from him. But if I can get, you know, if I can get a goal every 3 weeks, you know, or maybe I don't know, an assist every 4 weeks, if I can get on a goal and an assist every 5 weeks from him, that seems like a pretty okay return.
Yeah, and just go for it. You could look at Brighton and say their fixtures look great. Everton, West Ham, Southampton, Swansea, Stoke. It's all like lower difficulty, But these are still also the lower table teams. Even if they're going against the weaker opponents, there's no guarantee they're even going to get close to scoring a goal there. So to even play the fixtures here seems like you're fooling yourself a little bit.
Yeah, and just you brought up Hazard a second ago. We had a question from Dave from Burnley asked about 18 questions. I think we're going to answer like one and a half of them.
Well, Dave holds the record for getting three questions into one episode.
So that is true. Dave says, should we get Hazard now, or does the cracked Morata make him more or less desirable? There's definitely a chance that you could play Hazard as an out of position forward. The thing is, he's just so expensive, and he's been looking good so far, and I know that Chelsea's fixtures are really quite good moving forward, and I don't like not having a Chelsea player right now. Yeah. I think that's a problem I'm going to have to solve at some point. But I do think that for 2 million cheaper, or 1.5 million cheaper in some cases, you can get a Man City midfielder, and I think you're just as likely, if not more likely, to get points from them. So that 1.5 million can be invested in your defense up front.
If anyone's listening doesn't know what transfer Josh burned for on this game week.
I already said it. I said it's under the bucket. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't mean to like. Yeah. I'm sure there's like some. Whatever that is, it's the opposite of buyer's remorse, where you're like you're trying to convince yourself you made the right move. But even my decision aside, I mean, I don't think that's biasing me too much here. I mean, don't you think so too? I mean, do you want to shell out $10 million for Hazard right now?
Definitely. The last time we were really talking about Hazard too was coming out of the last international break, in which Belgium they were scoring goals for fun against really weak opponents, but Hazard was playing. He got a goal or two. I don't really remember, but since that international break, Hazard hasn't done anything for Chelsea. It's still kind of curious how Conte's working him back into that lineup. He's given us no reason to bring him in, and I totally agree. Okay, so yeah, you're specifying Man City midfielders, which is a great place to invest your money, but I'd also just say, look at any midfielder that is performing that is cheaper than Hazard, because Hazard is not performing, period.
Right. I mean, yeah, Christian Eriksen has performed all season, and he's cheaper than
Mo Salah, yeah. I mean, Sadio Mane right. Back in the lineup. Coutinho has been skyrocketing in value over the break.
He has been, but he's still almost a million cheaper, right?
Well, let's see. Coutinho started at 9 million this season, so I think he's up to 9.2 already.
Is he really? Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, even still, God, you know, I thought about bringing him in at 8.8 on my wild card.
Actually, Coutinho's at 8.9. I guess he had dropped a ton of value earlier in the season because of injury and all that Barcelona talk.
So Coutinho's at 8.9, already, you know, rounded in form. Eden Hazard is at 10.5 million. He's even more expensive than I realized. You just I don't think you can do it. I mean, okay, like, you know, if you're down 65 points in your mini league already, sure. I mean, that's probably a pretty good investment because, he's the kind of guy who can go for 23 points, especially at home.
Yeah.
But I just don't personally see it being worth the money. I think I would rather even Eriksen, right? I mean, you know, 0.8 cheaper. I would rather have him.
Well, let's get into this Sterling talk, because I think Hazard comes up because people are moving a lot of players around in their squads, mostly because of like Aguero and Morata injuries. They've got a little bit more money to throw into their midfield. So Sterling is the bandwagon. Like, there is a strong odor of bandwagon around Sterling right now. Slim Shady asks, Sterling for Mkhitaryan, is he the best replacement? So Sterling is coming out of this international break as the transfer du jour.
Yeah, he really is. And I think that the chatter that I see a lot online is, you know, Sterling versus Sané, right? And these are two players that are both, you know, reasonably affordable. Sterling is 7.9 million. Sané is 8.3 million. Those are players that most people can afford to bring in. They both haven't necessarily been the most consistent starters. Sané even more than Sterling, I think, although Sané is kind of earned his spot back, I think, based on some really, really good performances the last couple of game weeks. So, you know, and I think with Mendy out and Danilo moving there, at least at times, although, I mean, the Fabian Delph thing, like, who knows? Like, I still have a hard time thinking that Fabian Delph is a long-term replacement.
It seems
there.
Unlikely.
It does seem unlikely.
It's,
but
it's up there with Diouf for Stoke.
Right, it is, yeah. So, you know, the question is, between the two, you know, who is, you know, who is more likely to be worth the money, I guess, right?
Yeah, and we're looking at the heat maps here, and it's insane. Sané's heat map is all along the left side, like almost exclusively.
Classic winger, you know, heat map, right? It's like, yeah. All – Dele Alli's map looks like this a little bit too.
Yeah, it's, but Sterling is much more across the middle. Looks like he's able to switch sides of the field occasionally, take it through the middle a bit. He's a little more versatile within whatever system Pep's playing moment to moment. So, right. Yeah, just based on the heat maps, like Sterling definitely looks like the way to go.
Yeah, and he's, you know, 4 starts on the season, and 4 starts to 3 starts, and that includes one game that Sterling missed with a red card. He scored, you know, 5 goals to Sané's 3. Sané does have him with 2 assists and no assists for Sterling. I'm actually shocked that Sterling has no assists in the season, because that used to be a real go-to for him, because he's such a poor finisher that he used to lay it off a lot more than he'd. It seems like he goes for goal a little more often this season.
Yeah, I did a comparison for fun between Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne. I kind of have a vested interest because I'm still a KDB owner, and I think this is the conundrum with KDB. He just absolutely murders Raheem Sterling on stats, apart from goals. But what does that even mean, right? Because
we're talking about a fantasy, not real life.
Right. So you've got these players who are just stats killers, like KDB.
Dusan Tadic.
Yeah, and Tadic. Yeah, we this goes back to our conversation with Peter Blake on Patreon. But he's just not emerged as an FPL asset right now, too. So I'm curious to see how Sterling does. And I think, going back to that Jesus discussion, there's a pretty good likelihood that Sterling could play a false 9 in game week 8 and come away with at least a goal.
Didn't get a minute today for the England match, which was a huge sigh of relief for someone who brought him in early. I mean, I really took a risk because I brought in Sterling and Kane. And then before I put him in before they had to play 2 matches for the internationals. I was really nervous about it. But, you know, Kane scores 2 goals. Sterling, I mean, I don't think he really impressed last week, but didn't play at all on Monday, which is great. So there's no reason to think he wouldn't start at home this weekend. And just to talk a little bit more at the Sterling Sané. So in terms of penalty area touches, Sterling has 46 to Sané's 24. Goal attempts, Sterling has 19 to Sané's 10. Goal attempts in the box, it's 14 to 8. So just a lot of reasons to think that Sterling is going to offer you more FPL. You know, even okay, I don't think a lot of people like Sterling is a little bit like Lukaku. I think people just don't like him very much. Like, just personally, people don't like Sterling.
Have you ever met the man? I mean, to know to have met Raheem is to hate him.
Is that right? Yeah, no, I have not. So you went to that. You went to that meetup, right?
I went to the Raheem Sterling meetup. The only reason to go was to meet him, and you wouldn't believe it.
I like Sané more as a player. I mean, as a you know, fantasy aside, I like his game more. I just like him more. It seems like he scores more spectacular goals. But from a pure FPL standpoint, I mean, the thing is, they're both going to get rotated. I don't think anyone can really say. We're all just guessing about who's going to get more minutes over the next 5 game weeks between those two. I mean, who knows, right?
So David Silva doesn't enter into this equation for you at all?
Yeah, just with Silva, he's just not a goal scorer. I mean, he just doesn't, I just don't think he, you'll get assists from him, but I feel like I need more goal threat for my midfield because my midfield is so weak at the bottom. So right now I have Salah, Sterling and Choupo-Moting, and I have three midfielders who can all score goals.
Uh-huh.
And that just feels very important to me. I'm not looking for 2 points every game week, not from those three, because I'm really investing in the defense. I'm going four at the back right now. I need three midfielders. I need all of them to have some goal threat. And I actually do think that Sterling has some assist threat as well, and I think we'll start to see more of that just based on what we've seen from him over the years. And, you know, I think in the end, I mean, just because it's so hard to tell between those two, Sterling is 0.4 million cheaper than Sané, and that is kind of the final decider for me. He's just a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. All right. You make a compelling case. I do want to say I think a lot of managers out there will still be with David Silva, and his minutes are a little more consistent. And
that's fair.
He doesn't have the goal threat, but he's putting up FPL points as consistently as Sterling. I mean, he's on 44 versus Sterling's 35 points on the season. That certainly could change if Sterling is playing in a different position in the next couple of game weeks.
So. Ignacio V says, is it one last chance for Mkhitaryan? Is it time to transfer out? I wouldn't burn four to do it, but if you could move Mkhitaryan to one of these Man City midfielders, I think I would do it.
Mkhitaryan has got to be locked in at this point. I mean, Fellaini's injury is going to throw even more strangeness upon the Mourinho's team sheet.
Yeah, that's true. And Liverpool,
Herrera probably comes in, but that he offers something completely different than Fellaini. But I guess I mean to say that Mkhitaryan is nailed in that midfield right now.
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't burn four. I'm sure
he's going to score. That just bolsters your point to not. It's not a priority to get him out. I mean, you're seeing a lot of people dropping him, but he could easily get you an assist or a goal in the coming weeks.
David Velheim has a question. Final question for the midfield section. Says he's going to take a hit this game week, and he has enough money to go from Atsu to Sané or Silva or Tom Carroll to Sterling. And would you rather have Sterling, Sané or Silva, Brent? I'll leave it. I've answered this question, so what's your answer?
Well, for me, the way to answer this question is not which Man City midfielder do you want. It's which budget midfielder do you want. And I dare say you want Christian Atsu over Tom Carroll.
Yes, very clear. You're right. That's a good way to think about it.
So,
I mean, Tom Carroll's going to lose his spot at some point, right?
No, he's not. Why is he going to lose his spot?
Because he's not in that team
to score goals.
He kind of is, though. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that team needs goals. At some point, they need to bring in players who can assist or score goals.
So, I mean, Atsu looks more threatening there from the FPL perspective. And you could have Sané, Silva, or Sterling if that's the equation, right? Because if you're bringing in Sané or Silva, Sterling is cheaper than both those guys. So, David, I assume you can also get Sterling. So you might want to lean on what Josh is saying about Raheem Sterling here. I think he could be a good long-term pick. Definitely Sterling is a great short-term pick for Man City.
All right, just a couple defender questions here, Brandon. I think we can go through these pretty quickly. Jeremiah Johnson says, David Luiz is $5.9 million worth the savings over Azpilicueta.
That's a context dependent question, Jeremiah. If I think to get a Chelsea defender in, it kind of doesn't matter. The bulk of the points you're getting from either of these guys will be clean sheet points, so it's probably a wash. Azpilicueta is probably safer from rotation.
Might be safer. I mean, Azpilicueta's on four assists on the season, so I mean, you got to give him some credit. I mean, I know those are all been. I think have they all been to Morata?
So I'm giving Dave credit here, but what I'm saying is I want to know what Jeremiah is sacrificing. Like, what are you getting for the extra almost $1 million that he's saving by bringing in David Luiz over Azpilicueta?
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we don't know enough to answer that question, so we're going to move on.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to. I mean, having a starting Chelsea defender for under $6 million is good value.
Totally.
Compared to Azpilicueta, maybe not so much, but in a vacuum.
That's kind of my point. If it takes 5.9 just to get in on those Chelsea clean sheets, go for it.
Ian Walker says, this is an interesting question. I thought I knew the answer to this, but now I'm a little on the fence. He says, is it worth keeping Phil Jones, ahead of a Southampton defender?
I'd say, yeah. Manchester United have dropped one clean sheet so far this season. I understand they've been playing a lot of, quote, lesser opposition. And mm-hmm. But Southampton have been playing their own peers in the table and teams below them, and they've struggled to keep clean sheets.
Yeah, exactly. I actually, when I brought Jones in, I thought I would probably make the move from down to Southampton.
Cedric?
To Cedric, but now I'm not sure. I mean, I think I'm definitely keeping him for the Liverpool game, and then if I keep him for that, I got to keep him for the Huddersfield match too in game week 9. So then it's a question of whether I want to ride it out with the Spurs and Chelsea at the game. I mean, the thing is, his price hasn't risen that much, so you could transfer him out before game week 10. I think Spurs will score in that game. Although with a Mourinho team, you never know. That is a home match for them. It's the shame of it is that he doesn't offer any goal or assist threat. So, I mean, you're basically counting on 2 points if they concede a goal. There's no, he doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, we have both been Bertrand owners. I'm still a Bertrand owner. You dropped him, and he has not produced any attacking returns thus far this season, which is a huge disappointment.
All right, let me ask you this, Brandon. In the last, in the preceding 3 seasons, bearing in mind he's had some injuries, how many goals and assists do you think he's had total?
Ryan Bertrand?
Over those 3 seasons? No, Phil Jones.
Oh, Phil Jones? I would say 2.
2 what? 2 goals?
2 goals and no assists.
He has 0 goals and 1 assist, and that assist came in the 2014-15 season. He had no goals or no assists last season, the season before that, and this season.
Oh, Phil Jones has taken a real beating in this episode of Always Cheating.
Hey, I mean, he's on, if they keep clean sheets, he's good for bonus points, but he can't stay healthy. I mean, that's part of the problem, too, he might not play this match.
Yeah, you have to be very unfeeling if you're a Phil Jones owner, because if you see a crack in that armor, just you've got to get rid of him immediately.
Yeah, at least, I brought him at 5.1. He's 5.2 now. So if I did drop him, I could bring him back without only losing 0.1.
Yeah.
Ian Wilson says, there's no doubt that some defenders offer great values. Thoughts on 4, 4.5, or 5 at the back? What is 4? Oh, I see. 4.5 is a rotation with a cheap mid, or 5 at the back. Have you given any more thought to 4 or 5 at the back, Brandon? Is that something you're thinking about?
You couldn't pay me to run 5 at the back. I mean, we talk a lot about the stress level of rooting for clean sheets in FPL.
Yeah.
And rooting for 5 of them at a time... I'll die. I'm already not going to live to an old age. So why do that to myself? I do think 5 at the back is really not a winning strategy. Don't ask me to back that up with statistics.
I've been doing 4 at the back and I'm actually fine with it. I mean, it's worked out really well for me the last few game weeks.
There have been a ton of clean sheets.
Yep. And and obviously you have wingers like Ben Davis, who have just been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think that, I think 4 at the back, yes, for sure. 5 at the back is just a little too much for me. Mostly because it's just not my style.
Yeah.
I just don't like to play that way. And so I'll always be looking for a way to get out of it. I mean, if you are, if you really can just like you adapt your approach to each season and it's like tabula rasa, you just like start over, then fine, give it a shot. But for me, like, I know I'll be looking to bring out one of those fifth defenders right away.
I think the game with 5 at the back is you go all wingers who have potential to get assists and goals. And you brought up Ben Davis, and that's what you're getting with him. But that's just not sustainable. I don't think that there are 3 to 5 guys like that in the Premier League who are going to do that on a consistent enough basis that are going to give you the same level of return that you would if you're putting 3 premium strikers up front. So
yeah, I mean,
hard to recommend.
Yeah. The 3 at the back revolution has definitely changed things. We'll see how long it lasts, if it's a tactical fad or if it's something that lasts for years to come. I mean, it certainly opens up these defenders for a lot more points than we've seen in, previous years.
So are we advocating for a rotational situation in the back with cheaper defenders? The way I'm set up right now is I have, I'm a little heavy at the back. I have Monreal, Bertrand, and Ben Davis, and Ben Mee as well. Two Bens. I've never had, I don't know if I've ever had two Bens in my FPL team before.
So it's pretty go-to. It's a pretty go-to four at the back then.
Yeah, so I can run four at the back, and it's decent. And there had been, there's just been a huge amount of clean sheets so far this season. So I think four in the back is sort of meeting somewhere in the middle. But I and because there are so many clean sheets, I like the idea of getting a handful of 4.5 defenders. Like maybe you're going to go Burnley defender and Newcastle defender and say somebody else from Brighton or something like that.
Yep.
And do a rotation. And I think that's great. I think that's a fun way to play defense.
All right, well, we've gone pretty long here, so let's take a quick break. Before we do, I just want to quickly run through the Super League top 10. We didn't get a chance to do that last week. Hail Cheater Super League, Brian, it's the League of Leagues. You can still join that league. League code's on our website and on our Twitter page. Let's run through that top 10, Brandon. Why don't you do it?
Starting at number 10, it's Wenger in, no transfers allowed. Ninth place, Andrew Ferguson, two girls, one schlup. That's a new entry on the top 10 this week. Tie for seventh place, we have Bailly, George H.H.'s team, and also tied is Joshua Williams, Rome Lukaku. Sixth place, Justin Shu, Lambu Leapers. Fifth place, Rolf Arne Strandford. Sorry about that, Rolf. I detmest Leggett. In fourth place, Harry Atkinson, a Hooten and a Hollerin. Love that team name. Third place, Ben Sutton, the Terribads. In second place, Melvin Mbazi, Melvin United. And moving up to first place this week, great Argentine prose and poet artist Fabio Borges with Clichy's Clean Sheets, up to 479 total points. And Josh, we updated the homepage of our website during this international break, which is going to have a rolling feature of the Super League top 10. So if you ever wonder who's in the top 10, just go to alwayscheating.com, check out the homepage.
That's right. And we're going to talk about the Patreon stuff near the end of the pod. We've got a lot of thank yous to dole out. But just as a reminder, if you go to patreon.com/alwayscheating, you can listen to our interview with Peter Blake, which we've already brought up a couple times, just because it was such an interesting interview. You can also join our knockout league, which is a Survivor League that starts in game week 8. So all you have to do is join by Friday, and they'll make sure you're in that league, and then you just pick one team to win the following game week. And the winner of that Survivor League is actually going to be invited to be a guest on the podcast. So, all right, let's take a break.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Josh, let's take a quick minute to talk about our friends at Starting 11. It's a new daily fantasy app for the Premier League. Every time I say the word Premier, I'm sure somebody out there in the world grimaces. But to find out more about Starting 11, you go to their website, starting11.io. That's starting11.io. You can download their app for your iPhone or your Android phone. Go to the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store to get those apps. The cool thing about Starting 11 is it's a daily fantasy app for the Premier League, which you can play anytime there are at least two Premier League fixtures going on. It's a blast, particularly on Saturdays when you've got five, six kickoffs going on simultaneously. So you're setting your starting 11 squad up each day, and the great thing is you have no budget that you have to adhere to. So any players that you can't get into your regular FPL side, but you really want to accrue points in some sort of fantasy game, go to starting 11. And then the great feature, the piece de resistance, Josh, is the live in-game substitutions that you can make via the Starting 11 app. You are the manager on the sideline. If somebody in your Starting 11 squad is underperforming, they get injured, they get substituted off, you, in your lineup in the app, can substitute somebody in and start getting those points from those players, which is really awesome. And Josh, of course, we're still doing the Challenge the Cheaters competition, where you can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, send us an email, and challenge us on Starting 11. All we need to do is connect via our email addresses through the Starting 11 app. And you can play me or Josh during the weekend. We're always on the Starting 11 app playing. So that's a great way that we can interact with you, the listeners.
Exactly. So DM us on Twitter, Facebook, email us at hailshooters.com, as Brandon was saying. And yeah, we look forward to playing with you guys this week. We've actually played with a ton of people already, and it's a lot of fun. And just as an aside, Brandon and I had a call with the this is really, I'm like letting everybody in on
Insider stuff here.
But we had a call with co-founder of Starting 11, Thomas Braun, and there's some really cool stuff coming through the pipeline. We'll be excited to tell you guys more about that in the coming weeks. Brandon, part two is it's our lightning round section of the day. We're looking at all 20 teams. We're going to start at the bottom of the table, work our way up. We're just going to say one thing we know, one thing we don't know. Now, that's not for each of us. I think we'll just try to reach some kind of consensus here. And the reason we're doing this, we're going to focus on, you know, the FPL aspect of these teams. But I think it's really useful every now and then just to, like, take a step back, think about the team, think about, you know, sometimes you get in your head a little bit and you start thinking about, oh, maybe I do want to bring in, you know, some West Brom midfielder. Maybe I do want to bring in whomever. And then you just have to think about the team. Like, where are they? You know, like, are they in form? Are they scoring a lot of goals? Just that kind of, like, holistic view of what the team is like, I think can really, you know, help make your decisions. I mean, we talked about Man City a lot, and the point is, it almost doesn't matter what Man City midfielder you have right now, because we know how many goals they're scoring, you know? And so you just have to keep that kind of thinking in mind when you're making a transfer. And I think it's really useful just to, like, Jamie Vardy's a little bit like this too. Like, I'm a little reluctant to bring in someone like Vardy because, I mean, I know they look good at times, but that team just does not look like a complete team right now. And I think that's really going to hurt him. I mean, they've had way too many, you know, kind of dreadful games and nil-nil matches already this season where Vardy really should have been picking up points. And you just think if that team was operating a little more fluidly, he would have more points.
See the forest for the trees, Joshua.
Exactly, exactly. So, all right, number 20, Crystal Palace.
All right, what we do know about Crystal Palace, Josh, I would posit, is that they will at some point score a goal, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek will probably score that goal. So FPL-wise, what we know is that Loftus-Cheek is the only viable asset there. What don't we know about this club?
What we don't know is what defender, if any, we want to bring in at some point for this squad. Once the fixtures get a little better, you assume that Roy Hodgson will tighten them up a little bit at some point. It's still such a shame that Van Aanholt started the season at 5.5. I mean, I think his price has dropped a little bit, but he's still too expensive. Yeah. So, you know, what we don't know is if there is some 4.5 million defender that we want to bring in. And that's who I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it would have to be bargain basement to make it worthwhile. All right, 19, it's AFC Bournemouth. The Associated Football Club, known as Bournemouth. What do we know about Bournemouth? That I think what we know about them is that they're underperforming FPL-wise. So we know is they have a lot of viable FPL assets that just aren't coming to the fore yet, be it Charlie Daniels. Jermaine Defoe is perhaps one that we don't know about, one that we could put in the do not know category.
Yeah, we do not know which forward will emerge as the best option there, which means you just have to avoid both of them right now. I mean, you know, I was thinking about this with Stanislaw, you know, scoring a goal. You know, was it 2 weekends ago now? And it's like, well, like, because his value has dropped. I think he's like 7 million now. He's actually like pretty affordable.
Josh King.
But then, you know. Did I say Stanislaw?
You were a long time Stanislaw. Stanislaw's is burned into your brain from pain exactly. He inflicted last season.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Josh King. And so, you know, you see Josh King, and then you have to think, well, who is the premium? Like, who's the real lead striker in this squad? I mean, I still don't understand why they brought in Defoe. It doesn't seem like it's helped them at all.
And that was one of the worst transfers from my vantage point of the summer.
I know. It didn't seem like the whole ethos for them is they used to be like, they were like Burnley, where they're better than the sum of their parts. And now it feels like, it feels a little too star heavy. I mean, star with quotation marks, but it feels like they've brought in some kind of more expensive players, some big name players, and it doesn't seem like
they had a balance, and now the balance is totally thrown off.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Swansea City. What do we know about Swansea City?
Do we know
anything about Swansea?
Yeah, what we do know, I think, is that they're going to have a hard time scoring goals this year. They don't really have a midfield. I mean, and I don't know if they can stay up this year without a midfield. I mean, who's their best midfielder?
Yeah, I'd say what we don't know is what the potential is for Renato Sanchez, and that's the big question mark there. And he could be the key. Also, what we don't know is Will Ferboni. You purport to know, Josh, that Will Ferboni is just going to flame out. But yeah, I think what we don't know is where the goals are going to come from. What we do know is they'll struggle to get them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the defense, I have Fabianski. I'm staying with him. It's a big, we really need to see how they perform over the next several weeks. They have a number of fairly easy fixtures. Huddersfield at home, Leicester at home, Brighton at home, Burnley away. That's four of their next five. Then Bournemouth at home, actually. So five of their next six fixtures. They do play Arsenal away in game week 10. Five of the next six are really pretty strong fixtures, and you would think they need to pick up something like 9 points from those 18 to really start to feel like they can, actually stay up this year.
Yeah. Leicester, what we do know is they ain't what they used to be. We know that Riyad Mahrez is basically FPL dead.
It's funny that it's amazing that his price hasn't dropped. But then I was like, oh, right, because no one owns him. Like, he's actually owned by 3.9% of managers, which blows me away because I guess he scored two assists. He had two assists in game week two. So that's got to be like 3.9% just like dead teams, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, he only got 15 minutes in the last game and 60 minutes the game before that. They're kind of phasing him out.
If they're going to move him off in January, maybe that's the plan.
But no one wants him, right? I mean, he was available all summer, and nobody wanted him.
Listen, Mark Albrighton is doing all the work in that midfield. Who needs Mahrez?
Yeah, this is what I hope to know soon. What I hope to find out is whether Damari Gray is like actually going to start getting real minutes for them.
Yeah,
because. Yeah. 5.3 million, really interesting midfield option. Anyone who's, like so many of us, I've just seen a ton of Leicester over the last couple of years, because they've just been on TV a lot and it's kind of hard not to follow them, right? But Damari Gray has always been this like young, up and coming player. It couldn't really break through, partially because he and Mahrez are kind of playing a very similar position. For whatever reason, they haven't really played together that often, I don't think. There may be some Leicester fans out there who know better than I do who disagree, but it doesn't seem like they do. And, he's selected by 0.5% of managers, played the full 90. I don't know. I mean, he's got some goal threat. He's got some definite assist threat. So I don't know. What do you think about Damari Gray?
I love him. I think he's really terrific. I agree with what you're saying. Like anytime he would come in off the bench during that league-winning season, he never succumbed to the pressure. He's just like a really poised young footballer, and I really do want to see him get more regular minutes. And FPL-wise, if he's that price tag and he's playing in a Leicester City squad that has a striker like Jamie Vardy, give it to me.
Yeah, I don't mean to come off like a Vardy hater. I think at that price point, I don't know. I mean, he scored a bunch of goals this year already, so I like Vardy. I mean, I don't think he's a terrible option.
Yeah, put Jamie Vardy in the what we don't know yet, because I think he's shown a lot of great potential already this FPL season, but still there have been so many great viable strikers to buy. It remains to be seen if Vardy is really going to make a real claim for that third spot up front.
Yeah. Everton, what we know about Everton is that they have not figured out what the best lineup is, right? I mean, what is their best 11? It's like completely unclear.
Yeah. Koeman just has no idea what's going on right now.
Well, I mean, okay. To give Koeman some credit, I mean, they like basically have an entirely new squad and they have a bunch of injuries at the back. So I don't think they've had a really tough run of fixtures to start the season. So I think that you can take the results with a grain of salt, I think, to an extent. I mean, Koeman's a good manager. I think he's a good manager.
Well,
I mean,
not to get too like old school rah rah about it, but the esprit de corps that they showed at Goodison Park against Burnley in game week 7 was one of the worst you'll ever see, and that comes down to the management, and Koeman is not connected with these players at all. I respect the fact that they're all new and he's trying to figure it out, but it is like dangerous levels of ambivalence on that pitch.
Yeah, and I imagine the Calvert-Lewin thing is he's blowing some chances, man. Like that guy should have a couple goals.
Yeah, Calvert-Lewin is my FIFA spirit animal, getting lots of good looks in front of goal and just hitting the circle button, and yeah, it goes right at the goalkeeper, or it goes about like, you know, super slow, weak shot. Yeah.
So what we don't know is if Calvert-Lewin will ever score a goal in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, he's scored plenty already, but just not in he's scored them in Europa and all that stuff. I just need, give me one FPL return, Calvert-Lewin, and all is forgiven. I can move on with my life.
All right, West Ham United. All right, you take the what we know for this one.
Okay, what we know is that they're actually better than we thought they were at the start of the season. So they're growing into a viable FPL squad. Also, what we know is that Chicharito will never change. He continues to be a cherry picker of goals.
Sure.
And I would attach to that what we know is that he's probably not worth picking up on in your FPL team.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Unfortunately, I love all short men, all short people out there. I root for Jose Altuve, who's the Houston Astros second baseman. I'm just like a huge fan of. Yeah, I think that what we don't know about West Ham is when Slaven Bilic is going to get fired, which is going to happen in the next few weeks.
Sure, it is inevitable.
Yeah, and then when he gets fired, who's going to emerge? Because we all know that, you know, new manager comes in, there's typically a player or two who sort of come to the fore afterwards, right? I mean, I felt like Will Zaha really blossomed last year under you wouldn't have thought it would happen under Sam Allardyce, but it really did, right? The second half of the season was really like Zaha's like kind of emergence.
Yeah, I do have some fears that if Fulham continues to sort of just fly under the radar in the championship, like people are sniffing around Djokanovic, their manager, and he is somebody that could just move cross town to East London and take over that side.
That's interesting. And then Allardyce comes in at Fulham, and you're all set.
Yeah, right.
Brighton and Hove Albion, B&H Albion, Brighton.
Yeah, what do we know about them?
They can't score. Yeah. That's what we know.
Yeah, they have no attacking prowess, and they're pretty much all down to being they're like Norwich City 2.0,
right?
As far as I can tell,
what we do know is that they can win and keep clean sheets at home. So if you need a cheap defender. And they have a run of like, let's say, 3 out of 4 home fixtures. You know, they could be a good defensive option for the Christmas fixtures because I don't think there's a ton of depth in that squad. So there's a good chance if you have someone like Duffy or Dunk, you're going to get almost they're going to start almost every Christmas fixture, if not all of them. So
what we also do know is that Bruno loves himself a long throw in.
Quarterback style.
Also, what we do know is that Pascal Gross will probably never score another brace in the Premier League ever. So just put that out of your mind.
Anthony Knockhart is going to make sure that he stands in front of every shot from Pascal Gross. Oh,
what a terrible moment.
Stoke City. What we know about Stoke City is that they have a forward playing as a wingback. And I love it. I think that's fantastic.
And what we do know is that this could actually be Shaqiri's season, but I'd say what we don't know is, will it be Shaqiri's season?
Or Choupo-Moting's season.
Yeah, maybe. I like the value there for Choupo-Moting, but Shaqiri seems like, just for 0.3 more.
Sure. Yeah. I think we both would want Hesse less than those two.
Yeah, for sure. Shaqiri, Choupo-Moting, they sit atop the points totals for FPL for Stoke, but also they're just the best looking players there.
You mean like, well, yeah, and a team of Peter Crouch doesn't take that much, Brandon. I mean, come on.
Peter Crouch scores yet another goal. It just may it never stop. May Peter Crouch just continue to score garbage time goals forever.
All right, Southampton. What we know is that they are no fun to watch. Are they the least fun team to watch in the Premier League?
Well, this is Lamina is the wild card here. Lamina, the introduction of him has made them a lot more fun to watch, probably because there's like a cool blonde haircut to sort of track in the midfield. It's not just Romeu's like dome sticking out like a big thumb in the middle of the midfield. They just need to play Charlie Austin. Then they would be fun.
I know. What is the deal there? Why is Austin?
That's what we don't know. What is the deal with Charlie Austin?
I am like an on the record. Anyone who's listened to this podcast for a couple of years know I'm not a believer in Shane Long. I actually feel the same way about Robbie Brady. Just throwing that dig in there. Mm-hmm. I just think that, it should be Charlie Austin. I love Charlie Austin. What's that?
You just hate Irish people?
Is that what it is? It must be. Yeah. Well, an Irishman killed my father. So, you know, it's...
Right. Save it for another episode.
Save it for Mark Maron, man. Yeah. that's not true, by the way, in case anybody...
Your father is still alive. That's good.
Father is still alive. Huddersfield Town. Is there anything we don't know about them? We don't know when Charlie Austin's going to start.
We don't know about Charlie Austin. Right? Huddersfield, what we do know is that we've probably seen the best of Huddersfield Town this season. And this 11th is probably as high as they get.
Yeah, it's true. What we don't know, to bring this back to fantasy a little bit, is there a single fantasy asset you'd want on that team? I mean, possibly. What happened to Mounier? I mean, I know he's been injured, but is he ever going to come back?
Yeah, I think he's not
far. Is he back?
He's not far from coming back. And that could definitely be what they're missing.
Right, right.
But foot injury or something, right? Yeah, I think we had talked up Tom Ince coming into the start of the season. He has not scored any FPL points. And Moy, he's trying to hold Huddersfield up FPL-wise as best he can, but it becomes harder and harder to justify him at 5.5. If Aaron Moy is 4.5, then bless you. Let's keep this ride going.
Yeah. 5.7 right now. Yeah, it's that's way too much for Aaron Moy. I mean, you're just not getting enough. This team can't. I mean, this is why we're looking at this team holistically, because just if you look at this team as a whole, you would never bring Aaron Moy in because you know you're not going to get.
Yeah, the points potential is just diminishing game week to game week, and that is really going to hurt somebody like Moy. And so I brought in Moy at 5.5. The decision that Moy owners have to think about right now is, I don't think anyone has brought him in since then. When do we cash in on Moy? So just watch the price trackers like FPL statistics to monitor Moy.
West Bromwich Albion. What we know is that nothing ever changes, right?
Yeah.
That
there's been still a little more flair there.
No. I mean, yeah, I agree. But like, you still the players that you want are the defenders. I think that you want Johnny Evans, right? You want Johnny Evans at 5 million. Actually, he's only 4.9 million. Scored a goal. I mean, they get goals from their, from their defenders. And that's kind of, and everyone else is a crapshoot, right? I mean, the whole midfield and all the forwards are crapshoots.
What don't we know is, were we all wrong to get rid of Higazi?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, he's on 1-1. He's 0. He got one clean sheet, but he's on 0-1-1 in the other three matches. So,
but he retained the starting position, which was hard to predict there.
It was hard to predict.
Yeah, maybe exactly. He's locked in there, so that's not bad.
It's not bad. Newcastle United. What we know about Newcastle is that they're a pretty fun team to watch with some interesting FPL assets. Actually, this is kind of what we thought would be the case, and I think it really is the case. I think there's really maybe like four or five different players you could look at in that squad and think about bringing in, right? I mean, you've got Atsu and Richie, both of which are actually marked yellow flagged right now. Possibly Hoysalou. Definitely Rob Elliott, right? It's still only 4.1 million.
Yeah. Rob Elliott is the master of bench goalkeeping.
Totally. Tons of different defender options. I mean, you have LaSalle's already scored a couple goals.
Can we mention DeAndre Yedlin at 4.5? It looks like he
4.4, Brandon.
Okay, he dropped in value. It looks like he might be nailed again on the left-hand side. He had a great match for the U.S. men's national team the other day against Panama. And
so we are a little biased, to be fair.
We are. We're total homers.
All right, Watford. Wait, did we say what we don't know with Newcastle? Let's just move on.
You know? Yeah, we know everything about Newcastle. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, Watford. You take this one. What do we know about Watford?
What we do know is that Richarlison is emerging as the creme de la creme there in of their midfield. Yep.
And what we sold him 1 week too early.
Yep. And what we don't know is Gray. What's going on with Gray up front? He was one of the record signings in the transfer window, brought him in to play striker. He got sat on the bench in game week 7 in favor of Troy Deeney. So what's the deal there? Is he a viable FPL asset?
And yeah, so I think that's the question is, you know, I mean, because Deeney is a, you know, proven, he's kind of in that Charlie Austin mold too, where there's, you know, you can see why managers are reluctant to bring him in because, you know, they might not be able to do as many things as someone like Andre Gray can do. I mean, I don't think Deeney is very fast, for example. You know, he's a good leader. He's been the captain of that team, I think, for like, you know, more than a half dozen years. But I think that, what we don't know is who the forward is going to be for that squad long term. I assume that it'll settle into one. Maybe it's Okaka, Brandon. I mean, who knows?
It could be Okaka. And maybe just throwing in what we do know is that Watford as a defensive unit is not worth investing in at the moment, where they have been in years past.
Yeah, I agree. I would not invest in any of it. I mean, you have players like Jan Mod who can't stay healthy. You've got, Holabas is just like a, you know, he's always, you know, one yellow card away from suspension. All right, let's move on to Liverpool.
Oh my God, it's getting interesting.
Yeah,
what we know is that Mo Salah is the standout pick in FPL midfield this season and in Liverpool. And I guess what we don't know is how quickly it will take for players like Coutinho or Mane to overtake Salah, if they will.
What we also don't know is if they will keep a clean sheet the rest of the season.
No, that's something we do know. They won't.
You know, you think 31 weeks they won't keep one clean sheet?
I mean, probability says they will, but I wouldn't. Maybe we would not suggest that anyone bring in at Liverpool.
Certainly not. Maybe when Nathaniel Klein gets back.
So that pretty much covers Liverpool in a nutshell. I don't know that there are any big differentials at Liverpool right now that we need to discuss. I mean, guys like Henderson or Cham or Wijnaldum haven't really, or there has been no Lallana for Liverpool this season. So I think it's just what you see is what you get FPL-wise.
All right. The next one I'm excited about because I'm kind of in love with this Burnley team right now.
Well, tell us all about it, Josh.
What I know is that I'm in love with with Steven Ward, my defender who I picked up my wild card and got me 8 points last week and 12 points this week. I love the way this team plays. Everyone knows that they're extremely hard to break down at home. You got a ton of home fixtures coming up. I mean, their fixture list, you know, honestly, I think you could really go with two Burnley defenders right now. I think Pope is risky because Heaton will come back, but you could double up in that back line and probably get quite a few clean sheets out of it.
It is remarkable that they lost Keane, one of their major forces in central defense over the summer, and then Heaton goes out with an injury and they haven't missed a beat defensively. It's just like amazing organization.
Beautiful goal at Everton.
Yeah, so I agree. Like, what we know is the defense is the way to go. What we don't know is whether there's anything worthwhile attacking-wise here. Rob Brady is kind of falling a little out of favor as a bandwagon.
Right.
And Woods is a potential, but as we were saying earlier in the pod, I think he's just a little too expensive at 6.6.
Yeah, I think I'm a little higher on Wood than you are. I mean, I don't know much more about him than you do, but I've just, you know, in the I guess maybe the three Burnley matches I've seen this year, I was really impressed with him. So I do think that there's more goals coming from him. He's really aggressive, and he's not a cagey player. He's right up there. You know, he's trying to get his head in the ball. He's trying to get involved in the box. So
if you don't think Sam Vokes is going to be competing for those minutes, though, Josh, you're fooling yourself.
I got another thing coming, don't I? All right, we're into the top five. Arsenal, what we know is that their defense is probably a little underrated.
Yeah, totally. And they're getting a lot of attacking potential from that defense. We've seen it with Kolasinac and Monreal specifically. And also what we know is that Mustafi picked up a really terrible injury for Germany today as we're recording. So that could mean that what we know is that Rob Holding is a pretty good FPL pickup right now.
Only 4.7 million. Very interesting option there. What we don't know is whether Alexis Sanchez will ever justify his price tag at 11.9 million. The problem really is Lacazette. I just think that Lacazette is the kind of player who can get the goals. He's not on free kicks. So I'm not saying that Lacazette is the same player as Alexis. I mean, they have different styles, but I think Alexis was certainly capable of getting a lot of poacher type goals, you know, because he's so aggressive. He's always sniffing around. And, you know, if there's a loose ball in the box, there's a good chance Alexis is going to find it and then rifle it, you know, at least make a shot on goal.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's what Lacazette does too. So, I just don't know if he's ever going to be worth $12 million this year.
All right. What we know, Josh, I want you to tell me how many goals Lacazette is going to score at the by the end of the season.
All right. 31 more weeks to go. He is on he's on four goals right now. Oh, let's just extrapolate that out. So what is that? Seven times four, seven times five is 35.
I regret asking this question.
Yeah, so I'll say he scores 20 goals.
Yeah, I'll go 18. All right, Chelsea in fourth place. What we know about Chelsea is they're still really good, particularly defensively. What we don't know is, particularly at this moment in time, where goals are coming from. With Morata out, is Hazard going to be involved in it all? And is Batshuayi going to be a worthwhile FPL investment?
Yeah, I think that is really throws things off because we know that their fixtures are ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to get some Chelsea players in at some point in the next few weeks. And I really don't know how I'm going to do it. I mean, I honestly have no idea. I guess I need Morata to come back. If Morata can come back like in the next week or two, then I can just go Lacazette to Morata really easily. That's just the simplest move. If he doesn't, then, I mean, maybe you have to look at Hazard or a defensive double up. I mean, we're looking at weeks 14 through 18. It's Swansea at home, Newcastle at home, West Ham away, Huddersfield away, Southampton at home. I mean, that's like five consecutive clean sheets right there, possibly.
Yeah, I'm with Jeremiah on this one. I'm just picking which Chelsea defender I want. The trouble that I have is I don't know who in my defense I want to get rid of. It's like Ben Davis is the one defender that has some troubling fixtures on the horizon. But yeah. The smartest move is probably for me to dump Ryan Bertrand for a Chelsea defender.
Yeah. Tottenham Hotspur, what we know is that they are on the road. They're fantastic.
Yeah, when they're not at Wembley, they're great. Also, what we know is Harry Kane is
worth his price tag.
He is worth the price tag, and he's also worth all the pain and anguish. I mean, we suffered a lot through August and through some of September, but now it seems like it's all happening. And buy him for your FPL side now.
Yeah. And what we don't know is if they can start to perform at home. I mean, people talk about it like it's a myth, but I mean, they are not doing it in the Premier League at least. And you know, until they do, then we have to. You know, treat it like it's something that's a real problem that they have to get over. Yeah.
Could we say we definitely know now that Eriksen is a no-brainer over Dele Alli FPL-wise?
No, I still think it's too early. I honestly do. I mean, Dele Alli had, you know, three consecutive braces last season. I mean, I don't know if you listened to the Football Ramble recently, Brian, but they were talking about how, you know, he's had his head turned a little bit with some agents and maybe thinking about his brand a little bit, and there's just some concern that maybe his head's not totally there. So I think he'll get out of that though. I think he'll sort it out.
Yeah, I mean it does come down to Kane as well. When he was scoring a lot of those goals last season, like those braces you're talking about, Kane was out injured.
Yeah, well that's true. So I don't know. I mean I think I would rather have Eriksen, all things being equal, but I don't think it's like a runaway thing.
All right. Okay. Manchester United, what do we know?
Lukaku is going to score nearly every game week.
Yeah. And what don't we know what I don't know is if Paul Pogba will ever return to my FPL side, and that makes me sad. I want to know and I want him back. He was so fun.
I think so too. Now without Fellaini, I guess the question, what we don't know is, what we also don't know is whether any midfield FPL assets will ever emerge, you know, so Doesn't seem like it right now.
Yeah.
Outside of Mkhitaryan, obviously.
Yeah. And we also know that David De Gea is the best keeper in the league.
All right. Man City, what we know is that they are an attacking threat that the league has maybe never seen before. I mean, at least not in recent memory. I mean, the Liverpool team from 3 years ago or 4 years ago comes to mind, but even they weren't absolutely destroying people the way that City is right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am really excited to see how they continue to perform against teams like Chelsea. Yeah. And I mean, they beat Chelsea the way they wanted to set out to beat them, and that's impressive. But you know, flat track bully.
I mean, they just won at Chelsea, so I mean, I don't know, like. I don't think there's anything flat track bully. I mean, you mean flat track bully in terms of them not scoring a ton of goals in those matches?
Right. Like them being this insane attacking force just because they go and they beat up on the lower table sides or beat up on Liverpool who are down to 10 men. I don't want to get ahead of it here.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I mean, that's always going to be the case that if you go away to a place like City or a place like Chelsea, you're going to have to tighten up a little bit. So, I don't know. So, what we don't know, at least what I guess I feel like what I don't know is I'm still not totally sold on their defense. Maybe I should be by now, but I'm still like a little,
yeah,
I'm still a little reluctant to totally, you know, invest in that defense.
I agree. I mean, one of the standouts is John Stones, but the whole is Kompany coming back? Is Kompany not coming back? What rotation will ensue there? It's worrying enough to really question how worth it is it. And I think there are so many other defensive options out there that are a little more secure that I'm not tempted. Yeah.
Brendan, we're going a little long here, so let's jump right into part three, which just a very quick look at Game Week 8. But first, I want to give out a few Patreon thank yous. There are a ton of Patreon supporters this week after we ran that podcast with Peter Blake. And just, you know, we should have said at the top of the podcast, but thank you so much to Peter for appearing and giving us, you know, an hour or so of his time. It's a lot of fun to talk to him beforehand. And then, you know, listening on the podcast itself, the interview was great. And a lot of people, including FBL General, who was really generous about the podcast on Twitter. But just a lot of people were very very kind and really enjoyed the podcast. So thank you for that. If you want to go back, if you want to become a subscriber, you can actually listen to that podcast and listen to all the other ones we've done so far.
FPL General said Patreon, it was the best hour of FPL content he'd heard all season.
Yeah, it was really, it was very, very, very nice and complimentary. So we had a bunch of new Patreon subscribers. If you want to subscribe, once again, you want to go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And you can, there any pledge level, you can get access to the podcast. If you pledge at the middle tier, then you get to join our Survivor League, which once again starts in Game Week 8. It's a knockout league. It's not really fantasy related, but there's going to be about 100 managers. So it should be a lot of fun. And then the winner gets to be on the podcast. So, and yes, I would get a lot of Fantasy Football Mag discounts and offers and things like that, too. So here we go, Brandon. Here are our new pledges as of just the last week. Marcus, Anthony Sharp, Christopher S., Curtis Price, Andre Johnstone, Michael Prisco, Oddborn Strand, David Allen, David Becker, Andrew Adams, FPL Shorty, Oscar Holmes, Prithvi R., sorry, Prithvi, but I'm going to screw up your last name if I say it, Friend of the Prod, Brandon Teresi, James Darcy, Mark McGettigan, Michael Cahill, Martin Bauman. Why don't you take it from here,
Brandon? Sure. Onger B, Rick Hortensius, Craig McConachy, Rob Butler, Paul Mertens, James Irium, Andrew Pop, Chris Greco, and Lou Gutierrez. Thank you, everyone, and also our continuing Patreon subscribers. We could not do this pod week after week without you guys' support. Thank you.
Yep, exactly. Thank you. Once again, patreon.com/alwayscheating. Brandon, Game Week fixtures are finally back. I'm excited. I don't think we really have time to go through all of these right now. I think we've covered all the key topics anyway. I love that the weekend starts off, though, with Liverpool Man United, which is just a huge match to start the game week.
So big. And Liverpool hosting at Anfield makes this game doubly interesting. If it was United hosting at Old Trafford, you'd say probably probably a less high-scoring game. But Liverpool are going to come out gunning here. I'm concerned for a Manchester United clean sheet.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that as well. I don't know if I dare risk putting Phil Jones on my bench, but he might not play anyway.
Yeah, so we'll see. We could go back to talking about Mourinho's tactics. Like, this would be a game in which he would be very defensive and try and get Lukaku isolated on a counterattack and get the goal they need. Yeah,
that is true. A lot of mediocre fixtures in the after that. We've got cities. I mean, just a lot of good teams playing teams that aren't that good. You know, Arsenal, Watford, Man City, Stoke, Chelsea, Palace, Spurs, Bournemouth. I think we could see a lot of points on Saturday. Sunday, we've got Brighton, Everton. So maybe you'll finally get that goal, Brandon.
Pascal Gross. Come on, baby.
Yep. Oh, that's right. And Pascal Gross. Yeah,
Gross and Calvert-Lewin double here, and that would be perfect.
Yeah. Southampton, Newcastle. I think I might. I think Rob Elliott might get a start for me in this game. No, Swansea's at home to Huddersfield, so I've really got to start. Boy, in that
run him out.
Yeah. And then a dreadful Monday fixture, Leicester, West Brom. I know some people have Jamie Vardy, so they'll be interested in that game, but I think in general that's not a game I'm.
Yeah, all the FPL points are coming on Saturday. That's for sure. Things will be done, and your mini leagues, your head to heads, will all be wrapped up on Saturday. It looks like.
So, yeah, most, but yeah, exactly, mostly. That's for sure.
So captain options has got to be between Harry Kane or somebody in Manchester City.
Yeah, I think so. I think Kane is the pretty clear favorite here. I guess if you have Jesus, he's an interesting option. I think that Sterling or Sané, I mean, those are not bad either. I think that, Sterling is it like a, I don't know. I feel like that'd be getting too clever. If you have Harry Kane, you just captain him at home to Bournemouth.
Yeah. I mean, the ongoing concern though is Spurs at Wembley, and have they really performed there yet? And when is it going to start?
Right.
So it does feel like Manchester City playing at home at the Etihad could be a safer bet. But yeah, like you're saying, you're getting kind of too cute with Manchester City. Which player is it going to be?
Yeah, I agree. All right, Brandon, you can find the podcast on, you can find us, that is, on Twitter, twitter.com/hailcheaters, facebook.com/alwayscheating. We're on SoundCloud. Our website is alwayscheating.com. Email is hailcheaters, that's H-A-I-L, cheaters@gmail.com, and patreon.com/alwayscheating. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and please leave us a review. We've had some reviews come through recently, and I think it really helps, and it really helps get us, actually appearing in search results, which is, the only way people can actually find the pod. So thank you for that. And please continue to do so if you're so inclined.
Feeling your positive vibes, guys. Totally appreciate it.
Exactly. And you can also find us on Acast, Stitcher, TuneIn, and I'd say pretty much every other podcast platform that's out there.
Wherever you get your podcast, Josh, it's no problem. Just go out there and get it.
All right, Brandon, that was a fun 4.5 hours, and I look forward to this weekend.
Sure. I'm going to go collect my 401k because I'm old enough to retire after the length it took us to record this podcast.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.